Welcome to I'm So Obsessed, where we talk with actors, artists, and creators about their work, career, and current obsession. I'm your host, Patrick Holland, and today my guest is actor Paul Bullion, who you might know for his role as Billy Kitchen in the show Peaky Blinders. Paul could be seen in season 2 of The Witcher on Netflix. He plays the character Lambert opposite Henry Cavill. You might not know much about him now, but I found Paul to be charming, driven, and wait until you hear him explain why he loves competing in triathlons. First, I just want to ask, where are you calling in from, Paul?
I'm calling from Croydon, South London.
Oh, all right. So you are in the future. So how is the future there? I'm in New York right now.
Okay. The future is much the same at the moment, I think, as is 5 hours previous.
Yeah, I remember years ago, there was like I saw a short film. I think it's my favorite time travel film. And the idea is this guy made a time machine that allowed him to go back in time, but it was only 10 seconds. So everything, exactly. Hence, it was a comedy, if you couldn't think about that. But 5 hours would be just enough that you could learn something, but also have some shenanigans.
Yeah, I mean, you could actually change your whole life with if you get 10 seconds to repeat. There's a great film called About Time. If you look it up, he has the ability, and he meets somebody that he kind of falls in love with, and he says the wrong thing, and he just rewinds just ever so slightly, and obviously it has good and bad consequences to it. But it's a really great concept. It's like the butterfly effect and the sliding doors effect. Isn't it? You can change your whole outlay.
Yeah, I think maybe saying my favorite time travel movie is always weird, but I really like a lot of people like that film Primer. Have you ever seen Primer?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And I just rewatched it a couple of years ago, but it does still hold up. It still holds up. But clearly I'm not just here to talk about time travel.
We can do that.
If you want, we can do that. But I want to say, as with any good interview, I started by looking at your Instagram. And okay. I want to ask you about two things. One is there's a photo and you have a caption that says, the caption reads, Paul, do you have a style you're going for? And it says me colon. And what the picture is on one side, it's you and you have like long red hair and an awesome beard. And on the other side is a Muppet. It's the Ghost of Christmas Present from the Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a likeness that I get compared to a lot since I've had longer hair and the beard. And I'm not going to lie, if they were going to make a live action of that, I would throw my hat into the ring to play the Ghost of Christmas Present.
Well, I would think, because you have a background in theater as well. Have you ever done a Christmas Carol or have you ever played a Ghost of Christmas Present?
No, I think my brother did at a school production when I was about 10, he was about 12. And, you know, because he was 2 years older, they always got the year sevens to do the nativity. And he was the Ghost of Christmas Present. The closest I got was, I played Joseph when I was 11. So that's about as exciting as it got.
I would say you still have a little time to grow into that role, I think, though.
Yeah, a little bit. I studied musical theatre at degree level. So I started out in theatre shows. I did Carry a Sword in my first job out of drama school. I was in Spamalot, the musical, the Monty Python musical. Yeah.
Oh, okay, as an American who is obsessed with Monty Python, it's definitely defined a lot of my personality, especially in high school. What is it like being someone from the UK to participate in Spamalot the musical?
Oh, it was brilliant. In our first week of rehearsals, we had a few rewrites, so Eric Idle was in the room. It was a real baptism of fire and an extension of my training, really, because I went straight into rehearsals for that. And I was covering Sir Lancelot, Sir Bedivere, Patsy, you know, everyone. and I loved it. I knew the script like the back of my hand, and it was great doing all the kind of fast paced, physical kind of comedy. It was great. It was really great. And just to know how many, because we took it to like Italy as well at one point, Just to see how that humor translates around the globe is amazing. And I know that many Americans that were over from the US watching the show, they would always, you know, come around to stage door afterwards and say how much they love Monty Python. So yeah, it was lovely to be part of that.
I'd say, was there, you said you took it all over the world. Was there a city or an audience that really surprised you by their reaction to the show?
I mean, the best city we went to was Glasgow in Scotland. I mean, if you've ever been to Glasgow, they're just up for it all the time. and they, you know, the whole thing about, if you've been to a fish and chip shop in Scotland, they fry everything. And for the week that we were there, they were doing deep fried spam as a special. And it sold really well.
I bet it did.
Yeah.
I'd say that even without Spam-a-Lot, deep fried spam would sell really well here in the U.S., especially the southern U.S. where I'm from. So you referenced that was the first time you carried a sword. Clearly, the reason we're talking today is the next role in the next series you have coming out is The Witcher, and you carry a sword in that as well. You play Lambert. I'm wondering, what can you tell me? Let's just start with the sword. What can you tell me about carrying the sword, and what can you tell me about Witcher season 2?
So carrying the sword for me was quite important in my preparation every day. Like I wouldn't just carry it when we were filming. I'd have it on as soon as I got to set. I'd ask if the armorer could put the sword on, because it changed how I walked and it changed how I held myself, because, you know, they are weighty, the real ones. Obviously the replica ones that we fight with are lighter, but for the scenes I would always have my sword on between takes. I would eat my lunch with it, because it kind of informed how I walked and how I held myself. So there's that, and they were amazing, like, you know, made from scratch. Each character had their own design. Beautiful.
And the trailer, there's a bunch of other weapons. We see knives, we see fire, there's horses. What was it like getting thrown into all of that? And was there a particular like action or set piece that stood out to you that was a lot of fun to participate in?
So we had like daggers, axes, many different kind of instruments to fight with, and my favorite sequence, I suppose, as I've mentioned before, was Ciri's training sequence, which we spoke about at WitcherCon, mainly because with Freya we had such a fun relationship on set and off set as well. It was just, you know, we used to laugh a lot, and that fed well into the scene. Especially on long days, it's nice to just have a bit of kind of light humor. But as you could see in the trailer, in the final trailer, a group of us lining up with our weapons drawn. That particular sequence, as you'll see when the show drops, was epic to film. It took a long time to film, but it was epic and it was well worth it.
You playing Lambert in The Witcher, and the description, I think on the site, is the fact that he's a friend of Henry Cavill's character. I noticed that Henry's character has like yellow eyes. How come you don't have yellow eyes in this?
They are slightly mutated. The lenses went through a couple of changes after we had them initially fitted. They were almost too clashy with my eyes, with my hair, sorry. I've obviously got bright orange hair, and they added a spectrum of other colors into my lenses. And the idea was that, you know, the eyes were mutated, but they were a different shade of yellow. And you will see it in other scenes with closer shots, when the light catches them, they're definitely not my own color, and they are a shade of yellow.
So for The Witcher for season 2, when you first found out that you had the role, what was your action?
Okay, so when I found out I got the part, it'd been a very long day, and I was on the bus back from central London to the flat that I was living in at the time. And we were waiting on it for a while, because obviously with a show the size of The Witcher and with a part like Lambert, a substantial role, people have to make the decision. And there's a lot of people that have to be okay with the decision of who's going to play their character. So I was waiting for, it was going on 3 to 4 weeks. And I had an agreement with my agent. If it was good news, she would call me. And if it was bad news, she would email me. Now, normally 6 o'clock, for the sake of both of us, it's like, you know, I won't call my agent after 6 o'clock. She has a life and I respect that. So when she called me at 8:30 in the evening on the phone, and I was like, hi. And she was very casual and she was kind of like playing up to it. She was like, hi, Paul, how are you? So I'm very good. I'm just on the bus. Why are you calling? Because it's not like her to call at 8:30. She said, do you want to do The Witcher then? Let me think about that. I said, she said, you might want to get off the bus. I got off the bus and yeah, I have to say I was excited. This was before the first season had even come out, but I knew it was going to be special. Yeah, excited is probably an understatement.
And then you film the show, and then that first teaser or trailer comes out, and you're in it. What is it like seeing that the first time?
It's funny because I was in a hotel. It came through to watch before I put it on my socials, and no one was there with me, and I was sat on my bed and I was watching it, and yeah, there's some swear words. it was a very strange experience because we were in this massive bubble during COVID, trying to get this thing done, feeling very safe. Netflix, you know, really did look after us, but it took time. You know, it caused massive delays, and to see it was actually quite an emotional experience because, we've made something. You know, all that work's paying off. And it was great.
And then with The Witcher, it's based off the series of books. Had you read the books? Are you familiar with them?
Once I got the part, I read the Blood of Elves first, then I read the short stories. Then I watched season one when it got released. And then I worked my way through the other books before I started film, before my first screen test. Then I dabbled in the games after that because I knew the Lambert is a very popular character within the gaming world, but I was, you know, very adamant that I was going to make Lambert my own. But there's enough in the books and there was plenty in the script to inform me. And I feel like I really understand Lambert. So I have much respect for the game. I think it's a brilliant game, but I don't want to, you know, anyone to be under the illusion that I'm here to do an impersonation.
I like that and I respect that. And I'm curious, playing the game, how was it to play the game? Were you able to complete it at all?
I haven't completed it yet. it's a massive game and there's never really complete it really because you can go and do and make other decisions. It's a brilliant game. I mean, it's so colourful and, you know, for me playing a Witcher, being able to go into the game and learn all the different monsters whilst, you know, having fun and in such a vibrant way is a brilliant resource to draw on.
Well, and how was it working with Henry Cavill?
Oh, he's an absolute gentleman. He created an atmosphere on set during a very tough time for everybody. You know, we were all getting tested every day. We had seven months away. You know, wearing masks most of the time, and then, you know, it could have been easy just to kind of get into a bit of a rut, but I think we all just felt so lucky to be doing something when most of the industry was struggling, that yeah, the mood was good, and Henry is, yeah, like I say, a gentleman. He leads from the front, and he likes to greet people every day, make people feel included, and he's very funny as well. He's got a great sense of humor. And so we would crack jokes here and there, again, to keep the mood light. And that would feed into the scenes really well, because we are meant to be, you know, Witcher brothers, a band of brothers, essentially. So we have to have that camaraderie. And I think Henry was very good at leading that.
I'm very excited about season two. I really love season one, as a lot of people did. Is there anything else you can tell me about The Witcher season two?
Everything has expanded. You know, we're going deeper into detail now. So, you know, we've got a sense of the world and a feeling for the world in general during season one. Now we're going deeper into the politics and all the nitty gritty and the relationships and watching them evolve and form and deepen and all the exciting stuff. And whilst we're still expanding the world as well, you know, you're going to get to see where Geralt comes from, and you know, his home of Kaer Morhen and the rest of it. It's very exciting, and it all being on one timeline as well. Not that I didn't particularly find the first season hard to follow at all, but that's because I had read you know, the books. And but yes, I do feel that the audience are gonna not be disappointed in any way.
Okay, so Paul, the name of this podcast is called I'm So Obsessed. What are you currently obsessed with?
I mean, it sounds really bad. I love murder documentaries.
You're on the right podcast here. We are great. A big murder doc family here.
Fantastic. I mean, I think I've exhausted my streaming services with my consumption of murder documentaries. I think it's the human behavior element that really fascinates me, how somebody could do such horrific things and then just seemingly go around and be a normal functioning member of society. And then, it blows my mind. And in particular, I mean, one that springs to mind again on Netflix is, am I allowed to swear?
You can swear, yeah, go for it.
Don't F with Cats.
Yes.
Unreal. Unreal. Again, I finished that in one night.
That's an intense one to do in one night, because I had held off for a little while, because for some reason, even the idea of the title and what that is was just horrible enough for I don't know if I can get into it. So I kind of peeked through the door of that first episode and was just hooked. But watching that in one night, that is intense.
Well, I'm also an animal lover, so I was feeling all these emotions, and then they'd always leave the cliffhanger at the perfect moment to go, I can't go to bed now. I can't go to bed now. I've got to watch the next one. So yeah, and then I couldn't go to sleep until I've finished. Yeah, it was incredible. Obviously horrific what was going on in the documentary, but so well put together.
Yeah, it was almost so unbelievable that it didn't seem like this was a real thing. And then you're seeing news footage, and I was just like, how did I not hear about this when this happened?
Well, I remember seeing something online regarding the cat being hurt in a video. Spoiler alert, but it's out there. but then you learn that pretty quickly early on in the documentary, and I was like, oh, this rings a bell. I had no idea where it was going to go. No idea.
So the other thing people might know you from is you played Billy Kitchen in Peaky Blinders. That series has, like The Witcher, that series has a big fan base. When you look back at your work on that series, what comes to mind?
I just remember that was a very big turning point in my career. Not in terms of I didn't have loads and loads of work after that. I'd started working more consistently after that job. But what it gave me was this realization that I could do this. It was my first sizable role on a TV show, and at the time it had a cult following. Season two, it was this cool little drama on BBC Two in the UK. I remember Netflix then started showing Peaky Blinders, and I went over to New York, and I went into this bar called the Iron Monkey in Jersey City, and the owner, he was like, "Why is Billy Kitchen sitting at my bar?" I was like, "What? What's going on?" Like, and that for me, that's when I realised that Peaky Blinders was turning into something bigger than what it was when I joined it. Absolutely amazing script, but what I think it did is it captured the imagination of the working classes, I think, in terms of period dramas. So you had Downton Abbey, and you had like the Tudors, you know. But it was all about those shows, as great as they are, they're all about the wealth and the upper classes. And Peaky Blinders, it was really down in the trenches with the characters, and I think working class people could relate to some of the struggles of the characters in Peaky Blinders, and had global appeal for that situation. And I understood that very quickly when I was on the set, and I was working with big names like Tom Hardy and Cillian Murphy, and just being in scenes with them was just so great.
The other thing on Instagram I wanted to ask you about was you participated in a triathlon.
Yeah, I've done many triathlons in my time. Yeah, I love it. It's a great hobby to have.
And I've kind of got into cycling over the pandemic, but I'm curious, like, how many triathlons have you done, and what is the appeal? What about it really like connects with you?
So I've done two Ironman distances. Which is the 3 point, do you work in kilometers or miles where you are?
We do miles. So.
Okay, so it's a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, and then a full 26.2 mile marathon, all in one go. That was the first ever triathlon that I did. And I did that in 12 and a half hours. Since then, I've kind of learned how to be more efficient with my training. So I think in my time, I've probably done, I think, 12 triathlons, but I also do marathon running and half marathon running. And it's for me, it's for mental well-being. I think you're in an uncertain industry that I absolutely love, but because I love it so much, I don't want to take my value from it. So I set myself challenges away from the industry that I can focus on. Swimming is like natural meditation. You know, I'm no good at sitting still and meditating. I know the benefits of that, but I'm no good at it. I know everybody can meditate, but for me, when you're meditating, you're tuning into your breath. When you're swimming, that's exactly what you're doing. I've never felt more zen than after getting out of the pool after an hour.
For me, for the Ironman or triathlon, let me just do some math here. That is 12 more than I have done. So,
never too late to try.
Hey, never too late to try. And you're so kind to say that.
Well, if you're a keen cyclist, you're 100% able to do it. That's that in any race, the cycling is the biggest chunk. So,
yeah, I think for me, it's I've been through a couple accidents in my life where like I have some arthritis that also helps prevent that. But I it's not about my joints, this podcast. It's about you. And I want to ask you about another thing that I've been obsessed with lately, which is the film Dune. And you're in the film Dune. What was that experience like?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I am physically in it, but my lines got cut. Had a little exchange with Jason Momoa as one of the Sardaukar soldiers. I can see why the lines got cut. It was a very tense moment, and there wasn't any dialogue through all of that fight scene. It would have been very strange to suddenly hear my voice booming out.
Well, and what is it like to be on a film that big and that is that hyped? It's still hyped.
I'd say, but like similar to, well, there's no different to Witcher. I mean, I know Witcher season one was filming at the same time, not far from where the Dune studio was. And I remember saying, like, my friend was filming The Witcher at the time. He had he was in an episode in series one, and I met him for a coffee in Budapest, and I was like, oh, how did I not get seen for The Witcher? He was like, how's June going? I was like, it's amazing. The sets are amazing. But like, you're so close to something. And I knew I was only there for like 3 days. So I was like, yeah, that's great. I just wish I was here longer. And I was like, and he was telling me about Witcher. I was like, oh, what a dream it would be to be doing that. Oh, so anticipated. Witcher, like everybody's talking about The Witcher. And he was like, yeah, I'm having a great time. And then cut to, I think, 4 months later, I get a phone call with an audition. And that's when I was like, ah, maybe I wasn't meant to be in series one. Maybe this is meant to be the part that I get. And straight away, when I read the scenes, I was like, I could do this. I was like, I understand this character. I feel like, you know, what is meant for you will not pass you by. I know it's a cliche, but availability is your best asset. Availability is your best asset. And had I done something in season one, I wouldn't be, you know, playing Lambert now. So
that's happy. A great way of looking at it. I also think you should really want to win the lottery, and then hopefully that same series of events will happen. And
yeah, I'll put it out there now. I want to win the Euro Millions. Maybe I won't win it this week, but maybe it's because I'm meant to win it next year sometime.
Exactly. I'm thinking around May or June would be a great time for you to win.
Yeah. Well, my birthday's in June, so that'll be good.
You have been such a delight to talk to, Paul. I'm so excited about season 2 of The Witcher, and I wish you nothing but the best of luck, especially when we win that lottery.
Oh, thank you very much, Patrick. Same to you.
I want to thank Paul for chatting with me, and I want to thank you for listening. You can watch season 2 of The Witcher on Netflix starting December 17th. I'm So Obsessed was created by our executive producer, Daniel Ramirez. Our editor and lead producer is Sophia Fox-Sowell, and this episode was produced by Rebecca Fleenor. Please take a moment and subscribe to I'm So Obsessed on your favorite podcast app. Follow the show on Twitter at I'm So Obsessed Pod, and until next time, take care.